On today's episode of the DFA Podcast, we talk about catchers, concussions, and so, so much more. It's the DFA Podcast, and we're not on the 7-day disabled list yet.
There. Welcome to episode 33 of the DFA Podcast. I'm your host, Brian Grosnick, and joining me once again is RJ Anderson of CBS Sports. RJ, how's it going this fine Wednesday morning that we're recording?
It is going well.
Well, we've got a lot to get to today because we have some topical things to talk about as far as extensions go. We're going to make this a special all-catcher episode of the DFA Podcast because, well, quite frankly, those are the only big extensions that are going on, and RJ's got some catcher stuff that he wants to talk about that's going to tie into some work that you should be seeing soon on CBS Sports. So, RJ, we should probably kick it off with our big move, and I'm not sure which of the two catcher extensions that have just been signed qualifies as the bigger move, so I'll let you pick. There have been two major catcher extensions come through over the last few days. Kurt Suzuki signed a one-year extension with the Atlanta Braves. Tucker Barnhart signed a four-year extension with the Cincinnati Reds. Each of these deals just gives the team one more year of team control that they weren't going to have otherwise, and so I will throw it to you. Which of these two extensions is the bigger move?
I think we should let the horses out of the barn by beginning with Mr. Barnhart's extension. I would say that because it's also a longer deal and it involves more money. So we can probably start there. You know, always follow the money with these moves, right?
Right.
So, yeah, Tucker Barnhart, a little bit of a surprise to me that the Reds gave him a four-year deal. Not because he's a bad player, but because it's a little bit unusual to lock up a player of this caliber at any point, let alone when you're rebuilding. You really don't have much in the way of long-term guarantees. You know, they have Joey Votto, they have Homer Bailey, they have Mesoraco, and now they have Tucker Barnhart. And yeah, he doesn't really fit into that group. Of course, you know, Mesoraco doesn't really fit into that group either anymore. But yeah, Tucker Barnhart, what do you think of this deal?
Well, I think it's an interesting deal because when you talk about a four-year, $16 million extension, you're not talking about a lot of money per year. And locking down a guy who's at worst going to be a pretty solid backup catcher, I would think, is, it seems smart. The one question that I have is, I wonder if they knew what to expect going into arbitration. So Barnhart is arbitration eligible for the first time this season. He doesn't have flashy statistical, at least offensive numbers. He's about a league average hitter, maybe slightly better this season. But he doesn't have any power. He gets a lot of his value from getting on base. So I'm really not sure what his arbitration numbers were going to look like this year, the second year and the third year. So he doesn't seem like the type of guy who is in line for a big raise. Maybe he was going to be a, I don't know, $1.5-2 million first-year arbitration case this year. And then maybe he was going to get some raises, and maybe if his power comes through, then you could have seen a big jump. But I'm not really sure the Reds are paying anything less than they would have been through arbitration for these couple of years. They're really just getting that extra year of control. And maybe they're banking on him improving, and that would have adjusted the arbitration outlook or something like that. But Barnhart's kind of been a quietly very solid two-thirds of the time catcher for the Reds these last couple of years. He's definitely the type of player you'd want to be involved with. And to me, I think at $4 million a year, the money doesn't really matter too much to me, even though the Reds are a rebuilding team, because they've got to have somebody who can fill the role that he's playing on the team.
Yeah, and I wanted to note that they're actually going to be paying him a descending amount of money. He's going to make $4 million next season, then $3.5 million, then $2.5 million, and then it goes back up to $3.75 million, and then there's a club option involved. But, you know, that's an unusual contract structure, and it basically is going to be paying him the most money up front. So if you get why he would sign this, you know, he's making more money, guaranteed $16 million. You're not going to turn that down. And you're right, he's, what, a win and a half or so player. Maybe in his best years he'll be a little closer to 2 wins, you know. But defensive metrics are not too fond of him, even though he kind of had a good defensive reputation coming through the minors. He has a good arm, but in terms of receiving, you know, the framing numbers are really not there. So that's kind of interesting. Otherwise, like you said, you know, his bat isn't special, it's fine. And I guess the most you can say is this is a fine deal. You're not going to look back on it in all likelihood as, wow, what a steal, but you're also not going to look at it as a wasted amount of money. It's just going to be fine.
Right. I totally agree with you. It's a low risk, low reward sort of deal that they've made with Barnhart. And that's great. If you're the Cincinnati Reds, you kind of seem like a low risk, low reward team at this point. So it makes some sense to me. The one thing I'll say about Barnhart's defense is that defensive reputation has got to be due to his arm. He doesn't just have a good arm, he has a phenomenal arm. By Baseball Prospectus's metrics, he's been worth half a win just based on his throwing arm this year, which is wild. That's usually the throwing arm is one of the least statistically significant aspects of catcher defense. I mean, most catchers either gain or lose most of their value by framing. Blocking makes a difference, a little bit of a difference, but not a big difference. And arm is a little bit somewhere in the middle between framing and blocking. And to be able to be worth just half a win on your own, just thanks to how you're working with the running game, that's a lot. It's an extreme amount. He gives it all away through his framing, and he's kind of a below average catcher, like you mentioned, on the aggregate. But I think that's what gave him his reputation. I think it's something that really stands out. And if he didn't have a standout skill like that, and maybe was slightly better with his framing and didn't have such a good arm, I think teams might actually look at him differently. But having that one kind of thing that kind of pops is going to be valuable to him in some way.
Yeah, I think that's fair. And from a catcher who has something that pops to a catcher who does not, the Atlanta Braves signed Kurt Suzuki to
Whoa,
an
whoa, whoa, whoa.
extension.
Catcher that has something pops versus one that doesn't. Let's talk a little bit about Suzuki because I don't know that's true anymore.
Well, yeah, he's having a good year. Let's put it that way. But historically, he's not been so great, right?
No, he's been very bad historically. So I mentioned this in the transaction analysis that I wrote, but when I write transaction analysis for Baseball Prospectus, you know me by now. I don't tend to take extremely strong stances on any sort of transaction because, you know, usually you can understand the process in some way. Usually you can understand what a team is thinking, why they make these sorts of decisions. I savaged this Suzuki signing for the Braves this offseason. I thought this was a terrible idea because the Braves have Tyler Flowers, and Tyler Flowers is emerging as a top-flight catcher. Suzuki's skill set didn't seem very useful for this team. He didn't have any framing ability. He's a very bad defensive catcher. He seemed like he was on the downswing offensively. And then this year happened. And that's a pretty big shock as to how well he's been hitting.
Yeah, and he changes his approach. He's been more aggressive at the plate, even if it means expanding the zone and whatnot. And he's hitting for a lot more power. I don't know. Do we buy that any of this is legitimate? Because his ISO is over 250, and this is a guy who had never been over 200 in the majors before, save for a short stint with the A's in 2013. Excuse me. So I would feel like some of this probably is legitimate, but I don't think it's. You know, most of it, and I'm not sure if it's even a large chunk of it. It's just when a guy hits for that much more power than he's accustomed to hitting for over, he's probably going to finish over 300 plate appearances. There's probably some improvement there, right?
I mean, I would have to imagine that there has been some improvement, whether it's on him or whether it's on the fact that the ball is juiced and the Braves moved into a hitter-friendly park. That could have something to do with it too. But Suzuki's triple slash line is not substantially different from Gary Sanchez's this year. I mean, think about that for a second. Nobody thinks that that's the new normal for Kurt Suzuki, right? Like, nobody thinks he's going to hit like Gary Sanchez from now
I would
on.
think not.
No. And the Braves don't think that either, because if anybody thought that he was going to hit like Gary Sanchez going forward, he wouldn't be getting a $3.5 million 1 year extension. So nobody thinks he's going to pop off, you know, what was it, a homer every four games or something, what he's doing now. I think what they think is that, okay, maybe there is a little bit more upside in this player than there was before. And if anybody had thought there was this kind of power upside to go with his bat to ball ability, he would have gotten a very different contract last year. He would be looked at very, very differently this year, I think. If you're Kurt Suzuki and you have this kind of season, you really think it's going to stick, don't you not sign an extension and go see what you can get on free agency? I mean, there's a ton of teams with catching needs. So I think everybody understands that this is a regression issue. He's going to go back to being maybe slightly above replacement next year. His defense isn't going to get any better. But now we do have to kind of look at the fact, well, maybe the ceiling is a little bit higher than we ever thought on Suzuki.
Okay, that's fair. I would say that, the point you made about him even re-signing now instead of testing the free agent market is probably a tip-off that he doesn't even believe it's legitimate.
Right, yeah.
I will note, though, if it's even slightly legitimate, you could make the case that the Braves are going to have two of the best values behind the plate in all baseball next season, because Tyler Flowers has a $4 million club option for next season, and if you just check this website called Baseball Prospectus's leaderboard for a metric called wins above replacement player, Tyler Flowers leads all catchers in WARP this
Yeah,
season.
we all guessed that coming into the season, right? That Tyler Flowers was going to be better than Buster Posey and Jonathan Lucroy and Yadier Molina and all the other catchers by at least one metric. We all saw this coming, right?
Yes, I absolutely. The thing is, Flowers' value is driven in part by his framing numbers. He's actually received more than two wins with framing, which is a career high and nearly double his previous career high. And, he really worked to improve on that and whatnot. It just so happens that I got to talk to Tyler Flowers for a piece that's out now. If you're listening on Thursday morning on CBS Sports, and yeah, I suppose this is the part where I sell the piece, Brian, or do we want to
Yeah,
talk about
go
Tyler
ahead.
Flowers' contract a little bit more?
I think, well, we can talk really briefly about the contract because I think he's a very good player. I think he's probably not the best catcher in baseball, but between him and Suzuki, the Braves have had the best production from catcher of any team in baseball. They're going to get it for under $10 million next year, the same, some level of production from these two guys. So looking good to be a Braves fan, as long as you ignore everything else that's going on in the team. But yeah, let's talk a little bit more about Flowers himself and what you've found from your discussions with him and what you've been researching about catching.
Yeah, so I wrote this article about catcher concussions, and part of it involved this gear company called Force 3 Pro Gear. And Flowers wears their mask, wears their gear. You might have seen it. It's the Defender mask. It's spring-loaded, and testing results suggest that it does reduce the severity of impact on a catcher's head. Part of the interesting thing, though, is that Flowers is a part owner of the company because he got in so early, kind of got in at the ground level as far as major league players go. And I got to talk to him about that. And I did not really know that Tyler Flowers had a reputation for being so intelligent and well-spoken until I talked to him. And I came away really impressed because we weren't really talking about baseball. We were talking about gear. We were talking about his feelings on his role as a, not a role model per se, but his ability to affect, positively affect, children's lives who catch and parents' lives who let their children catch and whatnot. It was just really impressive. And, some of the news I break in the article today is that Yasmani Grandal is now buying in with the same deal for Force 3 Pro Gear. So Tyler Flowers is kind of, I don't want to say a visionary here, because other players have, ownership and gear companies and whatnot, but Tyler Flowers could be one of the catchers who's kind of leading the charge. And if you believe that the Defender mask does help reduce severity of impact, and again, there are test results that suggest it does, Flowers might actually be doing positive things for catchers across the league by, putting himself out there and by doing the best he can to kind of spread the word on, the benefits of switching to that mask. So Tyler Flowers is an interesting fella, not just in terms of his production and his team-friendly contract, but also what he's doing from a gear perspective.
Yeah, that's really fascinating to me because, a lot of times with baseball and this kind of culture of, shake it off, walk it off, and not really focusing on, really taking care of yourself in terms of injuries, trying to play through injury. The concussion protocol that's happened recently is kind of the one institutional thing that baseball's trying to do to defray some of that culture and anything that helps protect brains. I mean, we've seen so much going on with concussion research in the NFL and within other sports and in hockey. This is obviously something where if Flowers is able to do something that is going to reduce concussions, even if it's working with a smaller company that's working on these pieces of equipment, it's a net good. It's an unarguable good for the sport. So, I mean, props to him for that. I would like to pick your brain. I don't want to spoil your article too much, so we won't get into the nitty-gritty of it all that much, but you talk about Grandal. Concussions in baseball are a bigger deal than they have been recently, right? I mean, we're seeing kind of a rise in catcher concussions and that sort of thing. So, what do you think that is going to happen with catchers in baseball if we don't see some sort of move to better equipment or better protection for catchers going forward?
Yeah, the statistic I noted in the piece is that entering September, and according to data from Corey Dawkins of Baseball Injury Consultants, there had been 11 instances this season where a catcher had went on the disabled list due to a concussion or concussion-related symptoms. And in the previous two seasons combined, there had been 9 total cases. So this has been the year of the concussed catcher, so to speak. To answer your question, I feel like some of this is not necessarily that catchers are being concussed more. It's that they're reporting their concussions more, and that the teams are taking those symptoms seriously. They're not rushing them back out there. They're actually placing them on the disabled list. And, my bosses at CBS decided we should break out some of these stories from the main piece, and that meant using some of the stories that did not necessarily make it into the article, some of the quotes, what and whatnot. And that includes Buck Martinez, the former Toronto Blue Jays catcher and manager who now does announcing for them. And Martinez told me that he had been knocked out a few times at the plate and that he didn't know about concussions until well after his career was over. Like, he didn't even know the term concussions. Just to throw this out, like, the first time he started a major league game, and it just so happened he also hit his first major league home run in that game. But before he could hit that home run, he was actually knocked out at the plate, knocked unconscious at a collision at the plate. They allowed him to continue on, and he went on to hit his first home run. And every time, knocked out at the plate, woke up in the trainer's room with the ball still in his hand. So these are serious stories. Like, they sound kind of funny. They're sort of entertaining in a sense until you really sit there and think about, like, the drama, excuse me, the trauma affected on his body and his brain that was probably incurred in those collisions. And of course, Buck Martinez, if you go on YouTube and search for his name, one of the first results you're going to find is the play where he broke his leg on a collision at the plate and still managed to tag out an oncoming base runner. And, he was obviously a tough guy, still is. And, he doesn't look back on his career with regret or anything, but a lot of these catchers don't. I also talked to Rob Bowen, who you might remember from his days with the A's and the Cubs. And, he admitted it's kind of scary when you read about the CTE and, some of the negative side effects you can have, because basically every catcher has dealt with this. And it's not just the home plate collisions. And, thankfully, baseball has kind of curbed those a little bit with the Buster Posey rule, but it's the foul tips to the head. And I don't know how baseball is going to fix that other than, emphasizing education, emphasizing trying to do better with gear. I raised the example of Alex Avila's sparked mask a few years back, and we all found that so cool. And if you think about it nowadays, we should be mortified by that. Like, Bruce Maxwell just last week got hit in the face with a foul tip, like a square hit. I think the ball bounced in front of him, and he looked like he didn't look well. Let's just put it that way. And, a couple days ago, Yadier Molina got hit in the face a couple times in a row and left the game, and he was vomiting before he left the game. And some of these guys continue on. Those two did not, thankfully, but sometimes you see a guy get hit repeatedly and they continue on. And the example I used throughout this process to not only to give myself a reason to dig into it, but to keep going, is that Jose Molina, when he played with the Rays, I swear Jose Molina got hit in the face seemingly every other game. And he never left the game. He never suffered a concussion in his career. And I'm going to be honest with you, I think that's absolute nonsense. I promise you, Jose Molina suffered concussions throughout his career. It wouldn't surprise me if he suffered a lot of concussions throughout his career. They were either never diagnosed or he never reported them. Obviously, you don't want self-diagnosing, but he probably said, "No, I'm fine. I'll take a pain pill and I'll go back out there, or whatever." And it makes me very concerned. And here's, like, let's not overstate this. I'm not saying that he's going to get CTE, because the doctors I talk to and the field experts I talk to, they're not quite sure what causes the CTE. It's not a total number of concussions. It's more about how often your brain is exposed to trauma. And, you know, I'm not saying that there's a certain amount of concussions that are going to lead to that. I'm also not saying that you have to suffer a concussion and suffer brain trauma, because these subconcussive hits that you see on foul balls, especially repeated foul balls, those add up as well.
Right.
So, you know, I'm not trying to be a fear monger here. I'm just saying I don't know, but it does make me concerned for individuals like Jose Molina, who caught forever and who took those hit tips to the head and maybe didn't feel like they had the job security to report them or to sit out a week or 10 days or 3 weeks, whatever it necessitated. And yeah, that's concerning to me. I don't know how you fix that other than, like I said, to continue to preach education, continue to work with these gear companies to develop the best possible mask. And yeah, just keep an open dialogue with the players' union, and the teams about doing the best they can to the players who do suffer concussions, who do feel like something's not quite right. And yeah, it's a difficult subject.
Yeah, I think you get back to get back to one of the things you mentioned. The whole thing with Jose Molina is Jose Molina was never in a position where he could comfortably say, well, you know, I can just take a month off and make sure that my brain is healing, because so many of these backup catchers are really seen as disposable by a lot of teams. There's a lot of them, and there's always going to be a guy who's willing to step in and don the tools of ignorance and be, they've always, teams always have a third catcher at AAA. They've always got a fourth catcher. And with a lot of these backup catchers, there's a level of interchangeability that you really, you know, from the perspective of some of these guys, like Bruce Maxwell, we know who he is now, but at the time that he started suffering these injuries, like he could have very well been moved on by a team like the Athletics or a team like the Rays, who tend to, you know, cycle through a lot of guys and value immediate performance a lot, and you know, you maybe wouldn't have seen him again if he would have taken some time off with injury. So the concussion protocols being in place and being what they are good. The cultural changes are a little bit bigger because, you know, not only do you want guys to mandatory report when they've got a concussion or when it appears that they've got a concussion, but you also want to kind of change the culture a little bit to make sure that these players, even if they are put on the concussion protocol, maybe there's got to be some form of stability that we can provide to catchers beyond maybe even what we provide to other, you know, positions on the field. Maybe it would be better to have a designated catcher position on the 25-man roster where, you know, you can be sure that you're not going to lose your job as the backup backstop if you have to sit out a month because you keep getting brained by foul balls or something.
Yeah, and you know, we raised the example of Jose Molina. The time frame I'm talking about is 2012 through 2014. He was in his late 30s, and he caught 102 games, 99 games, and 80 games. Those are the second, excuse me, those are the most, the third most, and the fourth most games he caught in a single season throughout his career. The only time he had caught more than 80 games in his career was 2008 with the Yankees, and he caught 100 games that year. So we're talking about a guy who was literally, although he was at the end of his career, was literally receiving the most playing time he had ever received before. Yeah, he's not going to be like, you know what, I'm coming out.
Right.
And you mentioned the idea of maybe, you know, that designated catcher spot. Dr. Bennett Omalu, who everyone probably knows from the movie Concussion, he was portrayed by Will Smith, suggested that what baseball needs, excuse me, is sort of like a concussion insurance policy, where if a guy suffers a concussion that's diagnosed by an independent doctor, you can put him on this list. If he misses X amount of time, then the team gets money. And I guess, you know, that's one possible solution incentive to, you know, perhaps not blame the catcher or whatnot. Although I can see that being abused too, because we see teams abuse the regular disabled list. And you know, baseball, to its credit, I think has done a good job of limiting the amount of, let's call it tomfoolery that can happen with this concussion list, because you do need to send the testing results to baseball and whatnot. I think that's a positive step. That said, I don't know. Whenever you put financial incentive on a player missing a certain amount of time, it can get really slippery really quickly. And we just saw this with the Angels and Bud Norris and Jesse Chavez, how these teams are willing to manipulate these incentives, even if it potentially costs them in the standings. And I hate to think that they would do it with injuries, but I'm not naive enough to think that they are all pure-hearted and have the player's best interest in mind at all times.
Yeah, I've never. I understand why, going back to the Chavez and Norris thing, where the. For anyone who hasn't been following, there's. I think it was something with Norris where it was games finished or relief appearance. It was probably games finished, I think it was, for Norris, where if he got to a certain number of games finished, then he would get some additional incentives. And for Chavez, I think it was just innings pitched, right? Or was it starts for Chavez?
So Norris, the performance bonus was, I believe, for relief appearances overall.
Okay, so it
Meaning
was
make,
relief appearances versus games started for Chavez, right?
yeah. And then for well, excuse me, for Norris, that's what it was. Is that he just needed? I think it was like 60 appearances, and obviously, going to the rotation and whatnot kind of affects your ability to make those appearances. With Chavez, I believe it was actually the opposite. He needed a certain amount of starts and going to the bullpen obviously affects that as well. So, yeah, they kind of messed with both of them here, and they're trying to save. It's literally like 750,000 that they're worried about, which is an absurd amount for a team that, they're not going to make the postseason in all likelihood. They basically would need a miracle run here, but like it's not even $1 million that they're maneuvering to try to save, and that's crummy.
Right. And so what the Angels actually did was they had Norris start a game even though he spent the entire season in the bullpen, and they had Chavez come in relief, and nobody gets their incentives. I understand why baseball has its incentive structure put out the way that it is, where you can only reach incentives on playing time and not on performance. I don't necessarily agree with it. I don't know why we're sticking to that in. Because when these incentives are so directly tied to A, perhaps playing through injury, or B, so easily able to be manipulated by the teams, it seems like it's a very pro-team decision to have contract incentives only be tied to playing time rather than performance. It would be very different if you had your incentives tied to maybe not batting average, but OPS or something like that. I don't know. I don't know if there's a really good solution for that because it brings up its own problems, but incentives tied to playing time seem to be a net negative for player health, if you ask me.
I agree with that. And I actually had a front office member tell me that, the incentive system is so stupid because, you can put it on these kind of things, but you can't really put it on, oh, is a guy going to do X, Y, Z? And you're right, it is team friendly and it's open to manipulation. And nowadays, these front offices are more than willing to manipulate them. And to be clear, people have been manipulating contracts since the beginning of time. If you read some stories about Branch Rickey, there's talk about how he would go and he would not sign a contract officially. He would make the player basically earn it, even though he'd agreed to the contract. So, Branch Rickey set up as a patron saint of all this stuff, advanced thinking and whatnot. If you believe the stories that are out there about him, there's some shadiness that frankly we need to address more often because it'll shift your opinion a little bit on, the wholesome image and whatnot. But yeah, these teams are willing to manipulate this and unfortunately, efficiency and clever management have become so celebrated that sometimes we overlook how crummy this is for the workers, and we kind of forget that at the end of the day, the players are why we tune in, not the general managers, not, the directors of baseball operations, but the players. And if they're getting a raw deal, that's kind of it stinks. There's no other way around that. It stinks. And you hope that they get a better deal because, again, they are the product.
Absolutely, absolutely. I'm gonna always be pro player because that's just the way my personal beliefs lean, rather than the team's. I completely agree with you. So I'm really excited to get to see how this article is that you've got coming up at CBS Sports is gonna be responded to. I think people are really gonna like it. I think it's really insightful and useful. So hopefully you'll get the kind of response that I would hope you would with a lot of people learning some things about these concussions and learning about flowers and this company and how they're actually trying to do something positive to limit these concussions. So I think it'll be interesting to see how it turns out.
Yeah, and Brian actually did read the piece. He's not just saying that from guesswork.
Right.
And just to be clear, the company is interesting because the founder was a minor league umpire for a decade, started working on better gear because he felt like better gear was needed, went through 5 years of testing to develop this mask. And, if you believe some of the catchers who wear it, it really does make an improvement. You know, it makes a different noise. So there's some, you know, adjustment it's there. And I just saw an article by Mike Bernardino, and I think his name is Bernardino, the Twins beat writer. I'm sorry, I'm butchering his name. It's so early in the morning that I'm just lost here. But yeah, he wrote about the mask, and Mitch Garver apparently wears it or wears a variation of it. And Jason Castro does not wear it, even though he suffered concussions because he thinks it's a little too heavy for him. So
Right.
yeah, and you get on to there's interesting stuff in there about, well, hopefully interesting stuff in there about how some of the catchers point to the shift in mask models, and the hockey style masks are not viewed fondly by those who have worn them and whatnot. But anyway, I do
Yep.
hope that people enjoy it. I hope they learn something. And I hope that, you know, I'm not naive here. I don't think this is going to cause some great change. I don't think everybody's going to suddenly worry about catcher's health long term or anything like that. And realistically, they have it much better than football players do. There's like no comparison there because the mass of a baseball is so small compared to, you know, the mass of another human body, especially one who, you know, is literally employed because he's, you know, 6'5 and 280 pounds, 280 pounds and whatnot. He can fly. And, you know, I'm not trying to make this out to sound like it's as serious as football situation, but it is something that often gets overlooked. We see guys get plunked with foul balls all the time. We don't even notice it. You know, I raised the point in the article that when a pitcher gets hit with a ball, it's a big deal.
Right.
You know, when a catcher does, we kind of just shrug our shoulders and say, well, will they stay in the game or not? And that's kind of rotten because, you know, that's a guy's brain being affected or potentially being affected. And we've kind of developed paralysis to it, I would say, or apathy to it. And that, yeah, that stinks.
Yeah, and it's, I think part of the apathy is only because it's, I would say it's not even as noticeable. When you see a catcher, you know, you mentioned the throwing sparks off Alex Avila's mask, and that was kind of interesting when it happened. But there's so many of these little things that catchers have to deal with on a daily basis, from the, you know, foul tips banging off their fingers and stuff like that, that it, you're right, we become desensitized to the kind of punishment that they take back there on a daily basis. So it's kind of hard to recognize even when some of these bad foul tips hit them.
Yeah. Basically, hug your catchers if you can get their consent to hug them because they go through a physical toll that no other position in baseball does, not even close. And
No.
it's really, yeah, it's something.
Well, that'll do it for our catcher roundup. You want to talk about a couple of minor quick hits in an abbreviated end of season batting practice segment?
Yeah, I think we should start with a former catcher, though, and that's Bryce Harper returning from the disabled list.
Yeah, that's a big one, right? I mean, he's back. He's going to get some time to play in some games before October, and ostensibly he'll have his chance to help the Nationals avoid another early playoff loss. This is great news.
It is, although he went 0 for 2 with a walk in his first game. We're recording this on Wednesday morning, so we don't know what he did in the second game. I'm going to go out on a limb and say he goes, you know, 1 for 3. With a double. What about you?
Dinger. Bryce Harper always tends to come back with a bang. You know, what is it's his thing that pretty much every opening day he takes 1 yard. So I would expect that, you know, the time off will serve him well, and he'll come back and he'll hit. So I'm going to give him a dinger. I'm going to go maybe like 2 for 4, or 2 for 3 with a dinger and a walk. How about that?
That works for me.
I don't even know who they're playing today. So
Pittsburgh Pirates. Come on, Brian. Get with it.
yeah, right. I'm sorry, I'm not paying attention to the Pirates on September 27th. That's woe to me, woe to me. But yeah, it's great to see him come back, and I, you know, as long as he's healthy and 80% of what he normally is for the playoffs. I mean, you want to tie this into a little talk about, do you think the Nationals are going to make it past the first round of the playoffs this year?
Lord, man, I want to say yes because I would like to think that they will finally, you know, get over the hump a little bit. But it's going to be a tough matchup, isn't it?
I mean, I think so. They're likely to draw, what, it would be the Cubs at this point, right?
Yeah.
I mean, would you rather play the Cubs, or would you rather play whatever the wild card team is at this point? Because I'm kind of torn on that at this point. I kind of would want to see, be hopeful that you would play the Cubs over the Diamondbacks maybe at this point, because the Diamondbacks are awfully good recently, and I have strong feelings that they'll manage to turn it come out of the wild card game. But Yeah, I don't know. How weird is it to say that I would almost rather face the Diamondbacks than the Cubs, given what happened last year?
That is kind of weird to say, but here, so here's the thing. Would you think about even a little bit taking the Diamondbacks over the Dodgers?
Yeah, I would think about it at this point.
Imagine saying that in April.
Yeah, right. It's the wildest thing, but the Diamondbacks have been so good recently. JD Martinez has been the best hitter in baseball, or Aaron Judge has. I'm not sure. Over the last month, and yeah, the Diamondbacks look pretty terrifying now with their rotation, with their offense. Paul Goldschmidt, quietly being the best guy. Yeah, it's going to be a weird playoffs because for so long it seemed like the Dodgers were, Dodgers Nationals kind of seemed like what was going to end up the way the Cubs were playing poorly at the beginning of the season, but now I kind of think it's anybody's game in the National League, which is really strange to say.
Right. So I don't think I can let you off the hook here about talking about a recent New York Post report that suggested the Mets have some familiar names in mind for their vacant or soon to be vacant managerial spot: Robin Ventura, Alex Cora, Kevin Long, Bob Guerin, and Chip Hale. And it also has been reported that the Mets intend to part ways with pitching coach Dan Worthen. So what are your thoughts on that whole situation?
Well, they've got to move on from Terry Collins. That's no question. The names that you just brought up there, a lot of them aren't big sea changes for this organization. Hale, Guerin, Kevin Long's currently the hitting coach. So these are all guys that are familiar with the front office, and the Mets love stability and they hate making big, broad, sweeping changes. None of those names really jump out at me as being anything very exciting, really revolutionary. Long would be really interesting because his limited experience as a manager. I don't know how well he can work the clubhouse. Kind of makes me a little more nervous, but I don't know. At this point, it's kind of like a toss-up. And then with Worthen leaving, not being retained, that doesn't surprise me because I feel like the team needs some sort of scapegoat for all of the pitching injuries, and this is the way they want to go with it. There are some criticisms about Worthen and his, the way he teaches his Worthen slider or cutter. They've got Frank Viola, and Frank Viola has been groomed to be the next pitching coach for a long time in New York, and I think he'll do a very, very good job. So I don't think see that as being a big deal, but I don't know. Maybe he doesn't seem like the right guy to be punished for what the Mets have gone through over the last couple of years.
That makes sense. So, of those five I named, though, which one would you prefer the most? Which one would you prefer the least?
Okay, run me down the five names again.
So, it was Kevin Long, Bob Guerin, Chip Hale, Alex Cora, and then Robin Ventura.
It's tough. Almost for the reason of I really think it would benefit the team to have some diversity in the dugout. Maybe Alex Cora is going to be my number one choice. I think he's proven himself at lower levels, and he's probably a good guy to bridge any clubhouse divide. So Cora might be the guy I go with. He's also a little bit younger. I'm fine with Guerin. Long might be my least favorite, but Robin Ventura really didn't do a great job in Chicago. I love him as a player. He was one of my favorite players for a while with the Mets, but I don't think he's a good fit as the manager for the team. So probably Ventura.
That makes sense. And I would go with Cora as the number one of those as well. He has a good reputation. Love to see, a diversity candidate get a legitimate shot at a job, especially in a big market.
Right.
And yeah, I mean, doesn't he work with the Astros? Am I mistaken? I'm pretty sure he works with the Astros at this point. And, usually you are not working for that club if you don't have, yeah, I mean, he's a bench coach for the Astros. Usually, you're not going to get a job like that without having some insight into not only, how to deal with players, but also strategical aspects. And, I don't know his people skills, but I've always heard good things about him. And yeah, it'd just be nice to see a minority candidate get a job too, because it feels like Joey Cora has been called a future manager since I was 11. And yet, has Joey Cora gotten a job? No.
Yeah.
Has Jose Kendo gotten a job? No. So it's frustrating because these guys never seem to actually get the opportunities. And we've talked about this before, but this is a good time to bring it back up. It's just frustrating. Again, they never get their chance.
Yeah.
Meanwhile, guys who come off the field and have no experience are getting these chances. And it's always the same style of guy. And we've talked about before, there's really not anyone successful. And it's kind of funny because, you know, the Tigers are letting Brad Ausmus go. And we should touch on that in a bit. But one of the reports from that was that the, excuse me, this one, I guess this is the Mets one. They were looking for someone like Mike Matheny who would be open to advanced metrics and all. And everyone was like, huh? Because
Yeah.
Mike Matheny is not exactly who you think of when you think of a progressive manager.
Not at all. Not at all. And on a couple of different levels, he's not a progressive. So yeah, no, I completely agree with that. It's strange. I would be really interested to see who the Tigers go with, because the Tigers are in more of a rebuild from the ground up kind of situation, and there's a lot of options that they could do. They could go with somebody who's got experience with young players, like a Bo Porter. They could do somebody who's very analytics driven. They could do somebody who's very old school driven. So it'd be really interesting to see who they kind of want to go with to lead their team too. So I'll be really interested to see how that turns out as the offseason rolls on.
Yeah, and it's probably going to be someone who's more player development driven, I would guess, because, you know, if you're a guy looking to win, you're not going to take that job. So that might be a case where, you know, a minority manager gets a shot. It's maybe like a Rick Renteria role, either with the Cubs or the White Sox. And it stinks that it seems like those are the only situations where they will actually consider hiring a minority manager. We saw it in Houston with Bo Porter. You know, he was there to babysit, and then as soon as the team was, you know, getting a little closer, no, he's out the door. And, you know, I guess I'll say this, at least they're going to get an opportunity, but those are the kind of opportunities where there's no winning. Like, unless you pull off, you know, some miracle turnaround, that it's just not likely. You know, it's just a horrible situation. You're going to spend 2 years there, you'll get fired no matter your record, no matter how good you are, and then someone else will come in and win with that team, and you'll be forgotten. And we saw Lloyd McClendon in Seattle. He had a winning record in Seattle. He got fired. Do you even know where Lloyd McClendon is now? And I'm not saying he's a good manager. I'm not saying the results were necessarily indicative of his managing ability. But how often do you see a guy get fired with a winning record over multiple seasons, and then he has to go? I believe he was in the minor leagues last year, and now he's actually their hitting coach with the major league team. But think about that. Like, imagine, I don't know who I want to use in this example here, but imagine a coach, or excuse me, a manager who has a winning record over the last 2 seasons getting fired, and the only job he can get is in the minors.
Yeah, that's very surprising. Unless there's some sort of extenuating circumstance that it doesn't seem like it would be right. So I'm with you 100% on that. The Tigers kind of are interesting because, with Al Avila in charge, they have one of the few minority decision makers in the front office, which may be helpful in this team, where if they do decide to go with a diversity candidate, maybe they will be thinking about it from a really who's the best person for the job sort of situation, rather than just defaulting to the easiest and therefore whitest, most visible candidate for a job.
Yeah, and you know, unfortunately, people like to hire people who remind them of themselves, or people who they think they can get along with best, and that's often, you know, someone who reminds them of themselves. So, something baseball is going to have to work on.
Yeah, for sure. We'll switch gears just a little bit for the last thing I wanted to talk about. We had our big Padres episode last episode, and now we have some minor Padres news. It looks like Carter Capps is going to go under the knife for thoracic outlet syndrome surgery. TOS surgery, not a good thing. Are we probably done with Carter Capps in the major leagues?
Yeah, I mean, thoracic outlet syndrome, excuse me, surgery does not get the attention that Tommy John or even like labrum surgery gets. However, the results, excuse me, for players coming back from that, they're not good. There are a few success stories, but for the most part, you don't return as you were, and some guys don't return at all. And I feel horrible for Carter Capps because he was legitimately one of the most interesting and successful relievers in baseball not long ago. He's basically been cursed since. You know, he even had the fascinating delivery that made him a little bit more famous than your typical reliever with, you know, a similar success story or whatnot. And yeah, this stinks. There's no way around that. It stinks.
Yeah, it's really unfortunate. I would have liked to have seen him recover and come back and be as great as he was for that short period in Miami. One thing that kind of jumped out at me about this is you think about the more recent thoracic outlet surgery candidates, and Matt Harvey's probably the most visible of them, where he came back from his thoracic outlet surgery and has looked like hot garbage ever since, basically. He doesn't have the same stuff that he had before. His control is off. And it makes sense. It's a huge surgery that comes after you pitch with a lack of feeling in your hand, and there's all sorts of other kind of side symptoms to it. There's usually some rib movement that's done. I'm starting to wonder about this, though, as it seems to be cropping up in pitchers who are coming off of Tommy John surgery. And I don't want to say that the two are related, but I think there's room for an interesting injury study about how this is kind of cropping up. And I'm seeming to see it in pitchers who are rehabbing from Tommy John surgery. Does it have something to do with the rehab? Is it because pitchers are maybe, whenever you have one injury, you usually compensate for it? And does that have something to do with it? I sincerely doubt that the two are directly tied together, but it would be interesting to see if there's some sort of correlation between recovery from Tommy John and development of thoracic outlet.
That is interesting because the guy who pops to mind for me is Alex Cobb, and he had the thoracic outlet surgery before he had Tommy John surgery.
That is
So.
interesting. And Cobb really has been one of the few TOS guys who's come back and looked, if not the same, has at least had some success afterwards.
Yeah, I mean, his strikeout rate is down from what it used to be. He gives up a little bit more in terms of home runs than he used to. But you're right, he's going to get paid decently this offseason, I think, as a mid-rotation starter. He made 29 starts this year. They're going to skip his last start kind of as a favor to him, which, I mean, we were just talking about how teams don't look out for guys' best, interests, their well-being and whatnot. That's a generous thing for the Rays. And even if they're, just using that as a way to get one of their younger starters a look-see before the season closes, that's still a nice gesture if it's actually, even partially driven by the desire to make sure Alex Cobb's hitting free agency healthy and he's not going to, go out there and suffer a freak injury that puts his status in doubt. So, kudos for that. But
Maybe
yeah,
he's
it's.
Alex Cobb this offseason.
Or maybe he's not because his name has two B's, unlike his stat line. So, no, just like his stat line, actually, over the 9 innings because 2.2 walks per nine. So, wow. Anyway, that's probably a good point to stop because we are running on empty here and we're all caught up now.
So I think this might be our last episode for the regular season. So we've got one MLB season of the DFA podcast in the books. We'll continue to be reporting throughout the playoffs, and we're gonna have some different types of shows. And then, of course, when the off season gets going, that's when we're really gonna be busy breaking down all the moves and the transactions that happen in the off season. We'll be keeping an eye on what your favorite team is doing, and talking about all those moves. So, RJ, are you looking forward to an off season of these podcasts, or are you about ready to take a couple month breather yourself?
You know the answer to that. And since, this is episode number 33, which is amazing to think that we literally went through a full season of starts in podcast form because it feels like just yesterday we were talking about doing this.
Right.
And you know who wears number 33? A fellow named James Shields. And I'd be remiss if I didn't mention that since changing his arm slot, 10 starts, 60 innings, 4.33 ERA, 59 strikeouts, 23 walks. His season's over. And he did it. He ended it on a high note. 8 strikeouts in 7 innings against the Angels. 2 runs allowed. So yeah, we're gonna be monitoring that one. And when I say we are gonna be monitoring that one, I mean after they kick me off and replace me with Kreiser or someone, I will continue to monitor it even if no one else does. So.
Yeah, we will be breaking all the James Shields news come next year. I guarantee you. I doubt he'll be one of those guys that gets moved in the off season, but we'll have to wait and see.
But yeah, this has been, I don't know, this is enjoyable. I like talking baseball with you. You're one of the better writers out there. You're an intelligent guy. Your voice is very smooth and you present things very smoothly. So you make me look awful by comparison, but I
That's
enjoy. No, I'm just saying, I enjoy the discourse and I enjoy, getting to talk ball with you. And, we would be remiss not to talk about Sean Brody too, who edits all these, even if he's not on it. And unfortunately, he's putting his education over us, which frankly is a questionable decision because I think you would learn more listening to us than you would professors. But that's the future that these people want, and that's what we're gonna have to deal with. So.
Yeah, we should always give Sean a shout out for his excellent work editing these, making us sound better and smarter than we actually are, which is no small feat. So if you want to interact with the show, you can find us at DFA Podcast on Twitter, which is now we are now able to tweet twice as big as we ever were before. So that's not useful for us in the slightest. And in addition to that, you can always send us an email. We are DFA at baseballperspectives.com. We have yet to receive an email from you guys. So if you're listening, you can interact with us. Don't be afraid. We'll answer your questions. We'll talk about what you want to hear. We're a listener-focused podcast because so far no one has said anything that's been offensive to us. So
We did a whole show about the San Diego Padres, so you can tell we put the listeners first here. We
absolutely,
definitely.
absolutely.
Does anyone listen to this? I honestly don't know, man. Like, I don't know the numbers, and we don't get, like you said, we don't get emails, we don't get tweets. If you're out there, make contact with us.
Let RJ know that you're listening, that you care deeply about James Shields and Ryan Garten and Joey Cora, and let me know that you're Mike Clevenger's biggest fan and still believe in Mark Canha, and let Sean know that who's his guy, Jared Hoying and Adam Rosales fan. So
Fuckers.
especially if you're maybe the parents of one of these guys, because that's probably the only people interested in Sean's Hoying thoughts, I think, at this point.
This
But
is how
yeah,
the third body problem starts, by the way, is them asking for contact, and then well, I'm not gonna spoil the book, but what I'm saying is if that happens, it's been nice knowing you, Brian, and
Hey.
thank you, readers. Thank you, listeners and readers. Wow.
Yeah, we've got readers too. They're definitely people reading if there's a limited pool of listeners at this point. But yeah, keep reading, keep listening. Thank you so much for joining us, and we will see you next time once the playoffs have started. Have a good one.